Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an amazing guest joining us. You know, we're going to be talking about all the good stuff that we like to hear, like building, scaling, financing. We're going to be talking about why he got started in first place, how they got started with not the amount of capital that you would think about, you know, starting a hyper growth company. And also things like thinking about customer needs, competition, as well as how to think about problem solving, right? And why they thought that the problem that they were embarking on was meaningful enough in order to take action. So brace yourself for a very inspiring conversation today. And without further ado, let's welcome our guest, Anand Chandra. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Leonardo, for inviting me on the show.
Originally born in India, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
Life has been good. Earlier had some, you know, dreams of going to US, but then by the time I graduated from college, it was well settled that India will be the land of opportunities. So try to stay put and do something relevant for the country.
So out of all things, sciences and agriculture is really what capture your attention. You know, why that combination, and especially combining science? I mean, I know that engineering and all of that good stuff, you know, there's a lot of pressure culturally to really become an engineer or a doctor in India. But in your case, you combined it with something quite unique, which is, say, agriculture.
So if you look at all the sectors across the world, they will have ups and downs. Like engineering, there will be computer engineers in demand. There will be all IT engineers in demand. The doctors and all. Agriculture is a subject which is a need of the hour, which people need food, so you need agriculture. That's one of the sector which is very stable sector. And within the country in which I am born, with 16 agroclimatic zones, we can produce anything and everything. It opens up a lot of challenges which needs to be addressed. So a much more demanding sector, I would say, and challenging, I would say, which asks for a lot of courage to handle. So that fascinated me.
And then obviously after your studies, then you enter the market of becoming, you know, an employee, no? And then you basically join ICICI. And there, you kind of like scale through the ranks, you know, from regional sales manager to then becoming a product head, you know, all the way up, you know, right before you got started with starting your own business. So I guess over the course of those close to 9 years with ICICI, how was that journey like for you?
The journey was tremendous. At a very young age, I should thank the leadership team at ICICI Bank. We got a tremendous opportunity to experiment and learn. When you get an opportunity to experiment and learn, there's nothing better than that in a job profile. You were able to experiment. You were able to take those decisions. The decision-making was fast. So a lot of things you will see at Arya, what we have developed in the last 12 plus years, are mostly what we have learned at ICICI Bank on building those systems, building those processes. It was a very well, I would say, great and amazing experience at ICICI Bank, which helped us to start something on our own.
But also, it has tons of employees, this company. I mean, how many employees does the company have?
So while we were there, they were around 40, 45,000. Now I think it's running into lakhs.
Wow. I mean, that's incredible. Now, when you had that type of exposure to such a big organization, what were some of the biggest takes that you got from the experience there when it comes to structure, to the corporate organization, to team building, to culture? All of that, like, what were some of your biggest takeaways?
Some of my biggest takeaways were those hard decisions which were taken at ICICI Bank, something which I have learned from the leadership team. I can take some 3-4 examples to elaborate. For example, Madhvi Puri Bhuj, ma'am, who is currently the chairman of SEBI, she was one of the directors at ICICI Bank. I was fortunate to work with her. What I learned from her is when you are making a process, you need to get into details. You cannot be peripheral. You should know what you want to do. And she was very clear in her address when she used to address us that time is limited. You have to work in a limited time. So time management and understanding the customer needs is what you learned from her. When you look at other sides, there were people in the product team and all who helped us to understand how do you build processes. So at a very young age, imagine starting my career with ICICI Bank, and within 2 to 4 years, you get a chance to interact with the top brains in the organization. That really helped me to pick up their brains. And so whenever you are stuck, you can, you know, just go back and, oh, if he was there, what he would have done. So that really helped us to build some of those systems, the processes, even the products, as to what is the need of the product. How do you identify which segment you have to go, which geographies you have to expand? So those are the typical learnings which helped us to take Arya to place where we are.
So in that case, at what point, you know, it was about, I mean, as you were saying, about 12 years ago where you got started with Arya. But at what point did the idea of, especially after so long, I mean, you were employed for close to 9 years before you got started with Arya. At what point does the idea of Arya come to mind? What was that incubation, you know, process like? And what was the moment where you were like, it is time to take action and to really start my own company here?
So to be honest with you, the thought of doing something popped up in somewhere in 2019. And there was one other company which was there. So I and my other two colleagues who are there as group promoter, we were all in ICICI Bank. So we thought of buying that company that time in 2009. But then they quoted us in several million dollars, which was outside of our range to acquire. So that idea got shelved. And then again, this idea came to us in 2012 that there's another company called Arya Collateral, which is there, which was one of the vendors of ICICI Bank. So we said this company is a part of a good group, but in their overall scheme of thing, it's lying in a lurch, doing a limited kind of a business. Why not approach their promoters and give it a try? So their promoter or the chairman, Mr. Krishna Bhai, relied on us or trusted us and handed over the company with a 65% stake to us. He kept 35% with him. And there was no, I would say, apart from signing a shareholder agreement, there was no like concept of doing a valuation. It's just that he asked how much money you guys are ready to put in. You put in, run the company, take it. So that's the trust he had in us. He trusted us. And that helped us initially to, you know, scale up this to the level where we are. The idea of doing something on our own, while banks have their own challenges in going and meeting, you know, you have a lot of restrictions as a bank, you have a lot of thought processes alone. But when you do something on your own, the idea was, how do I go more granular? Because if you see, most of the banks still are working on the tertiary markets. You need people who can go to primary and secondary market. And this is where we found our space, going more closer to the production centers.
Because for the people that are listening to get it, what ended up being the business model of Arya? How do you guys make money?
So how do I make money is, I have identified that on the post-harvest side, we did some analysis and we realized that if people store commodities over a period of time and a bouquet of commodities, because of the price appreciation in the off-season, they will make money. Now, the challenge is, this is a concept which is good on paper, but how do you make it, you know, workable in the field? So when you go granular and you go to more deeper side of markets, more closer to the farmlands, you need to work out a model as to how you stay viable in small warehouses where the tonnage will be less, the funding amount will be less. So what we did is, we started our business with large corporates, giving them locations which they have not heard of, saying that you can procure from these commodities. So we took them to smaller locations. Say, for example, Bihar is one state where we are the largest today. When we started, we did not have much of a competition in those states. People were scared to do business there, or people were not ready to explore. So we went deep. We bought in a lot of corporates. When we bought in a lot of corporates, it helped us to create visibility for us. Because if you're working for a large corporate, the smaller guys can trust you more. And then we built up a cluster-based model, which helped us to work in smaller warehouses and work out those unit economics so that we stay profitable on the storage. Then when we realized that while you're doing the smaller transactions, though it was not making a lot of sense for the banks to invest or do those small kind of a transaction. That is when we, in 2017, approached RBI and got a license for NBFC, which is a non-banking financial institution. And that's helped us to do lending, do small ticket size. And then when we went a bit, we thought, as we are going, there's another problem which we have to solve, which is the access to market. So typically, the overall vision is solving two basic problems for the farmers or the farmer producer organization. The freedom to, the number one is freedom when to sell, and second is whom to sell. So to when to sell, you need a storage space to store. And when you need a, when you store, you need finance also because your working capital gets blocked. So farmer may need the money for their consumption needs. So that's where the finance and storage solves when to sell. And whom to sell is solved when I connect these people or the corporates with the depositors for selling their produce, giving them an access to a large number of buyers where they can negotiate a better price. So this is where I gave them a freedom of whom to sell. Earlier, they were restricted of selling into the same set of adatiyas or the traders who were located in the mandi.
So you guys didn't get started with a lot of money.
Yes.
I'm sure that that added quite a bunch of challenges to the execution. I know that especially when you don't start with a lot of money, any step in the wrong direction could be lethal. So how was that for you guys?
To be honest with you, we were saving every penny. And when we acquired this company is in a city called Mumbai, and me and my other partner, Prasanna, were based in Delhi. So we started commuting in train. So we came down from flight to trains to reduce the cost. And for almost a year plus, when we used to go to Mumbai for 10, 15 days, we used to spend a night in the office only. We used to have a sofa come bed there, and when the people leave the office, we used to spread that sofa, catch our hold of our sleep, and then before people came in the office, this everything was, you know, closed and all. So we saved penny at every step, and when you did not have the liberty of capital with you, it helped us you to build processes which were robust from day one. I would say the processes were leaner, without, I would say, compromising on the risk part. The other thing was tech was used from day one. Because if you don't use tech, your manpower cost was going up. So if you see, if I today speak of Arya, I can proudly claim that we have one of the strongest tech at the back end today. Like today, I can disburse a loan to a customer in less than 5 minutes. So that's the kind of processes I'm talking about.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
What was that moment where you guys realized you were heading into something really exciting with Arya? You know, that moment where you were like, wow, you know, there's a turning point.
So the day we decided to quit the bank and do something on our own, I think that day was the first step. And the day Mr. Krishna Bhai Kotak agreed to hand over the company to us was, wow, there's something good awaiting for us.
So talk to us about fundraising as well, because I know that you guys have raised quite a bit of money, over $100 million equity, and then also about $175 million in debt. How has it been to going through the motions of raising all that money?
It's an interesting balance, I would say, in India. Since I am from Manage and my other colleague Prasanna is from IRMA, the Institute of Rural Management, what we realize is there are certain challenges in fundraising, especially in a country like India, where there's a lot of prejudice for people who are passing from IITs and IIMs. When you are from Manage and IRMA, sometimes the industry does not give you that importance or relevance. But these people and their alumni are very strong and they get that audience, which was difficult for us to get initially. You know, they dominated. It's like today, in cricket terms, comparing Australia versus Zimbabwe. So we were the minnows and competing with them. So there were challenges initially. We had, when we wanted to do fundraise, there were challenges. People were quite skeptical in terms of our ideas, in terms of our growth plan, what we were submitting. So there were apprehensions that the plan which we had given to them will not be attained. We will not be able to, market is not big. But we came through and we took it step by step. So we decided that if we have to do those numbers, we will keep doing those numbers. One thing which we never compromise is on the profit. We realized it that what will differentiate us and the agri-tech sector, because if you see 4 years or 3 years ago before COVID strike in India and across the world, there were a lot of funding which was available to agri-techs, and at the sector was flooded with money. And right now we are going through that funding winter for the last 2 years. People are struggling because the models have been questioned. So what we were thinking as a block or a challenge for us is now turning out as a boon. Now, if you see, we raised equity in the month of June this year. USDFC has given us a guarantee for $19.3 million, which is a debt commitment from their side. One more is in pipeline for around $30 million for debt from UK-based company, which will giving a guarantee to HSBC to lend almost $30 million to us, maybe getting close in a couple of days. So the essence is, when you build up a profitable model, initially there were questions that you are not scaling up as like other agri-techs, but we were able to capitalize on the capital we have raised. We did not burn capital. So we were never in a cash crunch situation during the COVID. And our reliance on tech helped us to survive through COVID. When everybody was moving to COVID, we were with cap. We had capital, we had the tech capability to run, and we made profit also in those couple of years.
So what's the difference between raising equity and debt for you all?
See, debt for us is always a better option, since we have been all bankers. So we always want to leverage on the equity, because, you know, equity cost is always on a higher side considering the dilutions which you have to do as a promoter on the wealth creation part. So we always prefer to leverage and get a better debt. Initially, when we were raising debt, the ROIs which were offered were on a higher side, the rate of interest I'm talking about. But as we grew, as we attained scale, we are now able to squeeze a lot of the rates which we can get. So if you ask me personally, debt is always better than equity. But then you will have to, as a promoter, balance it out between equity and debt rather than going full-fledged to equity. So since we were bankers, so we maintained our financial statements, those compliances from day one. We never delayed in filing our bank statement, the financial statements with the authorities. There were no remarks because the compliances were up to mark. Because we had the perspective, how will a lender look at the financial statements? So we ensured we follow those standards and mentioned. So debt always is a welcome thing for us at a reasonable cost, not like as a, you know, too high cost for debt. So we are currently leveraged at, before the equity raise, we were almost at debt to equity ratio was 3:1. Now with equity coming in, so we'll be raising more debt to take it back to 3:1 leverage.
So talk to us about vision too, no? Because when you are raising money, ultimately, especially on the equity side, investors, they're betting on a vision, they're betting on a future that you're living into. So, Anand, if you were to go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a world where the vision of Arya is fully realized, what does that world look like?
The world will look like Arya would be the green operating system. in India to start with, and then globally. So we don't want to be a platform or a agri-tech. It has to be a grain operating system where every grain is digitized and gets, you know, moved across. So it's like the operating system on which a mobile works. So that's what we want to be in the agri side, the operating system.
As part of really going into that future, I know how important it is for you guys to really understand customer needs and how to address them, no? And in that journey of being able to listen to your customers, what has been your biggest takes?
See, the biggest thing is being staying grounded. We realized, I'll give you a classic example. We have learned a lot of things from companies, not from this sector. For example, if you look at the largest airlines in India today is IndiGo. I don't know whether you have heard their name or not. IndiGo is the largest airline today. And they have a very mediocre customer service. But they have the largest customer base. The reason is that they operated at a low cost, focusing on profitability. But they realized that if they operate their airline, committing to the time at which they will make you reach the destination, they will never lose customer. So if you see their processes, you know, while we used to travel, they have used tech at each step, smaller step, to ensure that their flight take off on time and they land on time. So they have identified the customer need as that, the turnaround time. Same thing we have realized that on a post-harvest side, as a, whom are we competing with? If we have to reach to the people who don't have an access to a formal banking, I am competing with a local money lender. Who can give, you know, when a farmer goes to him, who can open his cash box and give him the money right across. So is my turnaround time faster than that? This is when I will be more relevant. Because the farmer may not, I would say, value giving 2% extra or a 3% extra, considering the relationship with that. So today, if you see, banks lend at 10% in India. My lending rate is around 13%. And the unorganized sector will do at 18%. So if you are able to give a better turnaround time, you get premium in the market. So that's one customer need which is identified. Second customer need is, can I give them an access to a large kind of a customer who are giving or who are buying commodities at a credit? So that's where the platform business comes in. You plug in the bridge finance in between, or come in as a, I would say, an underwriter in between, where you are assuring the quality to the buyer, saying that this is in my warehouse. And to the farmer, you are giving him an access to the entire set of customers who can buy. So that's the customer needs which have to be identified. What we have philosophically stated is, we have not gone by perception. Say, for example, today people believe in India that we have a huge post-harvest losses, and people believe that the Indian supply chains are fragmented. Our philosophy, and personally my philosophy, is that the Indian supply chains are fragmented, but they are not inefficient. In a sense that we have a large number of small and marginal farmers, and we have a huge consumer base who are price sensitive. In this context, if we operate, the Indian supply chains are highly efficient. What they lack is a transparency. That is where we came in. That I will not compete them and set up a, or disrupt the market and set up a parallel channel. I will go along with the players and make it more transparent, which will help me to give an access of finance to all the participants.
So we're talking too about, you know, the future earlier. I want to talk about the past now, but doing so with a lens of reflection. If I was to put you into a time machine and I bring you back maybe to 2012, that moment where you were thinking about starting Aria and becoming, you know, a founder. And let's say I had the opportunity of putting yourself in front of that younger Anand and giving that younger self one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now after experiencing this journey for over 12 years?
That's a very tricky question you are asking me. You're testing my gray cells right now. One piece of advice is, I would say when we started, I was not 100% into it. I did my financial calculations wrong, and I started with the money which we poured in as capital. I, among the three guys, I put the least. I could have put in more and got more stake. Maybe something was stopping me to put in. If I can go back in time, I should have backed myself more on my capabilities, which I did not do that time.
So, Anand, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
So best way they can reach out to us, we have a PR team who can also address them in case they have specific requirements. Like we go and address certain kind of students, and we also encourage a lot of study tours. There were a couple of countries like Senegal and Tanzania, people who came. So we have visitors coming on this Friday from Cambodia also to understand our business model. So we can arrange those study tours and get them more insight on what we do. And it's a part of the business, or it's a part of the same ecosystem. Happy to support people also if they want to replicate certain models outside India.
Amazing. Well, easy enough. Well, Anand, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Alexander. It's a pleasure to be on your platform.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.